Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, October 28th, 2012. This is episode 922. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by GoToMeeting from Citrix with HD Faces, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TECH. And by Ford, featuring Available Sync. Now you can control your media player with simple voice commands. Enjoy your drive while you easily search and listen to your favorite songs. Check it out on the 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, and other smartphones. Find out what your gadget's worth at Gazelle.com. And by... Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. That's me. And it's the show where we talk about tech. Boy, it's changed over the years, I gotta tell you. I've been doing Tech Talk Radio since 1991, 21 years. And in 91, it was what? Windows 3.0, I think. Pretty sure it was Windows 3.0. DOS 5. There were Macintoshes back then, but they and I had one. I liked them, but they you know, this was early days, and certainly the idea of a phone in your pocket, or a computer, I should say, in your pocket that doubled as a phone, was far off. I remember when the Newton came out a few years later, and I was looking at that and thinking, well, that'd be kind of cool if, you know, this were a little smaller, a little more powerful. I remember when color screens, I mean, the first laptops I had were all black and white when color screens came out. Boy, that was a big deal. Fast forward 20 years, and the world is changing again. The end, it's almost, I feel as if it's almost the end of the dinosaur era. Desktop PCs are slowly fading, sinking into the tar pits of memory, and being replaced by mobile devices, portable devices. And we're seeing a lot of portable devices now that are as capable as those computers, much more capable, frankly, than those computers of years gone by. But they're so lightweight and portable. We carry them around. They're connected to the internet 24/7. It's what Steve Jobs called the post-PC era. And it's not going to happen overnight, but it's definitely, you could feel the change happening. And a few things happened this week to further that cataclysm. Of course, Apple had its iPad mini event on Tuesday. And, you know, interestingly enough, in a post-PC era, while Apple did announce a new iPad, big brother iPad, the fourth generation, to replace the one they shipped 7 months ago. Whoops. That, I think, you know, it's funny because 7 months isn't, it's not, look at Android phones. You know, every 2 months there's a new Android phone. But there's an expectation people have from Apple. Once a year, that's it. No more, no less. And if you do it a little sooner, people get a little fraught. Well, I just bought my iPad 3 and already it's obsolete. No, but it's no longer the latest and greatest. They also announced the iPad mini. So the iPad is 9.7 inches diagonally. The iPad mini is 7.9 inches. That's easy to remember. They just flip-flopped it diagonally. iPad mini is not a Retina display. It's like the old iPad 2, 1024 by 768. Light, thin, not a phone, just a small iPad. They call it the iPad mini. We won't see them till Friday, but I'll have one for next weekend, certainly, to talk about. But then Apple did an interesting thing in this post-PC era. They announced three new Mac models as well. A MacBook Pro Retina, kind of expected that. That's still mobile, isn't it? A Mac Mini, That's kind of a specialized computer. I don't even know if that's a general purpose computer. That people use that for servers or their PC users. They just want to have a Mac on top of their PC or, you know, home theater. It's not really a desktop. And then the premier home computer that Apple sells, the iMac, surprised us all. I did not expect a new iMac. And this one I really didn't expect. When I first saw pictures of it some weeks ago before the release, I thought, oh, that's a fake. It's an obvious. I thought it was obvious fake. Why? It's only 5 millimeters thick at the edges. There's no way you could make a computer. They did. Wow. It looks fake if you look at the pictures. It doesn't seem real. Of course, it's got a little bit of a bulge in the back. That's where you have to put the guts. You can't, you know, we haven't yet figured out how to eliminate the computer guts, but it's still pretty impressive. And the fact that Apple is still kind of committed to desktop kind of surprised me a little bit. So the new iMacs, they'll be here November for the 21-inch, December, not till December. I'm sure they'd like to get it sooner, but not till December for the 27-inch. So even here we are in the eight. Now, of course, you go to the front page of Apple, and you don't see the iMac, the Mac Mini, or the Mac Pro, or the MacBook Pro. The big thing is the iPad Mini. They know where their bread's buttered. Most of their money comes from the iPad and the iPhone. And then on Friday, a big day, Microsoft on Thursday had an event, a celebration of Windows 8. And on Friday, we got our Surface tablets, our RT tablets. And lo and behold, these are, it's kind of a... See, I think Microsoft isn't fully committed to the idea of abandoning PCs. Actually, no more than Apple is really, right? But they see a future in mobile. And this Surface RT tablet is a really interesting hybrid. I got the touch keyboard, which is for $10 more. It's a keyboard with actual keys, you know, and it's got a kickstand and the touch keyboard attaches. It really is a laptop more than it is a tablet. In fact, when you detach the keyboard, the Surface RT, this is Microsoft's version. The other companies are going to do these. It's a little clunky for it. It's thick. Compare it to the iPad. It's considerably thicker. It's kind of a funny, 16:9 widescreen. It seems a little odd compared to a tablet. It's a little heavier. And really, when you try to use some of the tools without a, with touch, it's a little difficult to be frank. It's really designed, I think, especially when you get into the desktop and you start using Microsoft Office, which comes with it. It's really, this becomes difficult to use with just your fingers. You really want to attach a keyboard. The keyboard has a trackpad. And now you've got a laptop. And a very, lightweight. Now, suddenly it's, this is lightweight, thin, easy. for a laptop, it's pretty amazing. Price-wise, I think it's a very good deal, too. Now, they made it comparable to the iPad. $499 for the Wi-Fi-only version. Does have more memory, 32 gigs. It is running Windows, a special version of Windows, Windows RT, that focuses on the Metro interface. But what I think is very interesting is Microsoft, again, not fully committed, I think, to the idea of the abandonment of the desktop, has put a desktop and Office on this. So considering you get Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, and the notebook for $499, you're going to want the keyboard. 110 to 129 more. But even then, at $629, this is a very, I think it's a nice laptop. And certainly because of its form and its light, how light and thin it is, it's not, carrying it around is really kind of like carrying around a tablet. I think this is very interesting. And what it is Microsoft saying there's more than just the iPad in this space. There's more than just the Samsung Galaxy Note tablets or the Amazon Kindle Fire HD, all of which are selling fairly well. And then, of course, on Wednesday, Samsung had an event announcing the U.S. arrival of its phablet. I love the proliferation of sizes and form factors. This is the Galaxy Note 2 phone. And I saw an ad for the Galaxy Note 2 on the World Series last night. And they said a very telling thing, something I've actually said myself. they're at a couple are at a bus stop playing a game, and the guy gets beat by the girl, and he says, "It's not fair. My phone is, my whole phone is smaller than your screen." And it's true. The iPhone 5 actually fits in the screen of the Galaxy Note. It's a 5-inch screen. And yet it still, you know, it fit as a guy, it fits in my shirt pocket just fine. Just slides right in. So I don't say that any one of these is the right choice for you. In fact, what's interesting now is you've got to actually spend some time with all these devices and decide. But you have the choice. And that's, I think, very exciting. We are in exciting times. We are abandoning, I believe, we are abandoning the desktop. The desktop, you may still even have a desktop at home, an iMac or a Dell XPS 1. That XPS 1 running Windows 8 is spectacular. It'll double as a home theater system. You may still have a laptop. But increasingly, computing is going to happen as you walk around, as you're mobile. It's very exciting. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, your call's next. Sam, you know, there is a battle of the bands. Samsung had Kanye West at their event on Wednesday. Apple had the Foo Fighters at their event last month. But nobody at the Apple event on Tuesday at all. And Windows, Microsoft didn't have any bands playing, no. They had Steve Ballmer and Steven Sinofsky. That was enough. The Steves. And then, now Google was going to have an event on Monday to show off the new Google Nexus phone, which we are all pretty sure, because somebody left it in a bar. We're all pretty sure it's going to be a LG-based phone for Google. The Nexus phones from Google are Android phones, pure Android. They don't have LG or carrier cruft. They're just pure Google. And then I think they were also, Google's also going to announce 4.2, a new version of Jelly Bean. And maybe a tablet. We hear, and I would have loved to have seen this, that it is a Super Retina. These guys are not in competition. No. So Apple on Tuesday, Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, compares the new iPad mini with a best-selling Android tablet, very clearly the Nexus 7 from Google. And it compares, of course, the mini in Tim Cook's hands compares very favorably with the Nexus 7. He leaves out a few things like improved dots per inch and things like that. But that, you know, that's fine. It's, you know, I wouldn't expect Apple to be fair in a comparison like that. Nor would I expect Google to take it lying down. Of course, Google supposedly on Monday was going to announce a very high resolution 10-inch tablet from Samsung. Higher than the iPad. Whoa, boy, baby. But we won't know because of Hurricane Sandy, I'm sorry to say. Well, that's not the least of the reasons to be sorry about Hurricane Sandy, obviously, and I wish everybody in the Atlantic coast, including my mom and my sister in Rhode Island, batten down the hatches, listen to your emergency services people locally, and do what they say. Don't try to ride it out. I remember when I lived in Rhode Island when hurricanes would come, I'd go to the beach. Stupid. Stupid. Do not go to the beach. Go to high ground. Please. We can't afford to lose any listeners. Go to high ground. In any event, that the Google event has been postponed due to that hurricane. It was going to be in New York City. They're switching off the subway. That's pretty serious. That's pretty serious. Mary Bloomberg said, these trains, I love his accent, these trains are designed to survive all sorts of wear and tear, but they don't do well submerged. Gary Laverne, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Gary.
Morning, Leo. How you doing?
I am great. How are you?
Hey, I got an old computer. It's from an XP, and I bought a new computer in the meantime. But the XP comes up on the screen for about when it's first booting up for about 10 seconds, and then it goes bink. The screen goes blank. Sounds like the CPU is still down or still.
You still hear fan. You still hear a fan going.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the bink and the screen goes blank. Yeah. Did it actually go bink?
No.
Oh. That would be a good clue. Bink. By the way, this is why people are dumping PCs and going to tablets. Is stuff like this. So there's a lot of things can go wrong. You hear a fan still, and the screen never comes back on.
Correct.
Does the screen light start? You know, some screens, most screens, have an energy star thing where if they're not seeing a signal from the VGA card, they go blank because they figure, well, then there's nothing going on, and I'm not going to stay on for nothing. And they'll blink at their light. They will start blinking. And they might even say, they might even flash up a message saying, you know, I can't see a PC. Do you, you don't see any of that?
Nothing.
Nothing. Well, I mean, there's so, gosh, I mean, I'll run through the things that could go wrong. Usually, the way we do troubleshooting, at least the sensible way, it's actually not the way most people do it. The way most people do it is they take a pickaxe and then they start to dig deep into the most serious stuff. And I don't recommend you do that. My strong recommendation is that you do the easy stuff first. So I would check the monitor and cable. Check the monitor. If you have another monitor with another cable, get it, bring it over, plug it in, see if it works. If swap out the cable. Those things are easy to do, right? If the monitor does the same thing, then, well, okay, it's not getting a signal from the computer. It's possible the computer is failing on boot, that the reason you get a dark screen is nothing's happening. Usually, though, if the computer can't boot, it'll put up a message saying, I can't see a drive. You know, something will stay on the screen. The fact that your screen's going completely dark really implicates the screen and the video card much more than anything else. However, could be a power supply is bad. So the power supply is able to get going, spin up the drives, start it all up, and then it goes and dies. If that were the case, you might, I wouldn't expect to hear fans. The chat room always loves to say leaking capacitors. There's just something they like about that. Leaking capacitors. And it's true. Vintage, older vintage machines had this problem. There were many machines sold for about a year with bad caps. And it's true, it could be that. But that's one of like 100,000 things it could be. I can't really tell you remotely, Gary, what's wrong. But I would certainly, check out the screen first. Knox Harrington says there were a bunch of Dells that had a lot, that's true, that had problems with the leaky capacitors. They're badly made Chinese capacitors. Let's go to Russia. What do you say? Alexander is on the line via Skype. Здравствуйте, как поживаете?
Oh, hello. Hi, Leo.
Hi, Alexander. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for your shows, because I've been learning English from your shows.
Wow, because your English is excellent. At first I thought, oh, he can't be Russian. He must be an American. You're excellent.
Expected something like hello from Russia, right?
Yeah, say hello. Well, Alexander, great to talk to you. So you listen to the show on the internet. That's wonderful.
Yes, I've been listening for maybe a couple of years, and it helped me to improve the language.
Well, it's great. Well done. You sound great. Have you been to the U.S. at all?
No, not yet.
Well, please visit us when you do. I would love to meet you.
Oh, thank you.
What can I do for you today?
So I'm a programmer, and I created a simple PC Windows application that helps your eyes to relieve eye strain, tiredness and that stuff.
I love that.
And yeah, it reminds you to take short and long breaks. It's very simple.
Yeah.
And now I'm also thinking if I should consider porting it to different platforms such as Android, iOS, or maybe Windows RT.
Well, the first thing I would do, because you've already in, you did it in Visual Studio? I'm sorry, say again because it cut off. Did you do it in Visual Studio or Visual Basic? What did you do it in?
Yeah, it's C++.
C++.
Using VX widget, so I can port it, I think.
Yeah, C++, if it were C# in Visual Studio, then getting to RT would be almost a push of a button. It'd be fairly simple. I would start with RT. There's going to be huge... You know, when a new platform comes out and there are very few apps for it, anything can do well. So I'd start with RT. More to come in a bit. Our musical director, Kyle Benham, who is quick on the draw with a song, apropos song. This song refers to a conversation we were having in the break with the chat room. I often talk to the chat room. You can get to the chat room, by the way, by visiting our website, techguylabs.com, and clicking the chat link. But we were talking about Steve Jobs' yacht, which The Verge has an article today. Apparently the yacht, which Jobs was designing right up till the day he died. In fact, Walter Isaacson, in his biography of Jobs, talks about the fact that Steve is still designing it. And even said, I know it's possible I'll die and leave Laureen, his wife, with a half-built boat, but I have to keep going on it. If I don't, it's an admission I'm about to die. So Steve really was putting his heart and soul into this. And it's finished, apparently, at a Dutch boat maker. And it is, boy, it's a unique boat. They call it the Venus. And Philippe Starck did the interior, the designer Philippe Starck. They also, you can see if you look at the wheelhouse, 6 27-inch IMAX. That's how they navigate and steer. A lightweight aluminum exterior, 80 meters long, 240 feet. Wow. It's kind of funny looking. But, you know, what do I know about super yachts? Interesting. Interesting boat. So that's why Styx Sailing was on the air. We're talking to Alexander in Russia. Where in Russia are you, Alexander?
Hi again.
Hi, where in Russia are you?
In quite a small city, Ufa. It's 1 million population.
Well, that doesn't sound that small, but okay. And you're a programmer. You know, there's some great programmers in Russia, some of the best programmers in the world in Russia. And I think it's great that you're doing an app. So what's the name of your app?
It's called iLeo. Leo because of Leopard.
iLeo. I like the name. There's something about it. It just rings. It rolls off the tongue. So it's available for Windows now, and you're trying to decide where next. So moving it to, you already probably know all this. You wrote it in C++. The easiest, of course, is to make it available on Windows RT. And as I said, I think that's a good idea because there's nothing, you know, there's only 1,000 Windows RT apps out. So always, you know, there are a certain advantage to being early to a platform. People are going to try more apps and you won't be buried. You go to iOS, there's 750,000 apps, so it's very hard to get discovered. Android is a little bit less crowded, only 650,000 apps. Now Android is of course Java. Not so hard to port C++ to Java. It depends on how hardware dependent you made your program. You know better than I how hard this would be. Apple, you could write it in any language you want, really, but you need a Mac. And if you don't have a Mac, it makes it difficult to port over. But Apple's Xcode Studio can do everything from Python to Ruby. Objective-C is the native. And I think on the iPhone, you probably want to use Objective-C. So, where would you go next? RT for sure. That's the easiest and probably the best place. Are you charging for the app, Alexander?
No, it's free. And so I was thinking about porting into other platforms. I mean, I wasn't sure about this because in tablet, well, when you're working on desktop, you maybe work a lot, and your eyes, you know, they get tired. But on tablet, I don't think people work on tablet that much. So I'm not sure if it's necessary at all.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. That's a good point. Yeah. Certainly not on a phone. You know, nobody's going to stare at a phone for 4 hours. Well, wait a minute. Yeah. Actually, I've had some meals with my children where the entire meal they're staring at the phone. Do they do that in Russia? I don't know. In the United States, everybody's walking around looking at their phone. You never look in anybody's eyes anymore. Is it the same in Russia?
Yeah, I think the same, yeah.
In fact, it may have been that way earlier. I remember going to Italy and years ago and being amazed because the mobile phone thing took off there first. So, well, and what's the weather like in Ufa today?
Well, it's quite cold, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope you stay warm, and I am so glad you're listening, and I wish you luck with iLeo. That one I can remember. I will keep my eye peeled for that.
All right, thank you.
Wonderful.
I was so glad to be on your show. Thank you.
It was so good to talk to you. До свидания. Спасибо.
Спасибо.
Спасибо. Pardon me. Thank you, Alexander. My Russian is much worse than your English. Your English is superb. You've obviously learned a lot from listening to the podcasts. I want to learn Russian. Maybe if I listen to some Russian podcasts. That'd be fun. I should have asked him if he played chess. We could play chess together. The international language of chess. Rick in Oklahoma. Hi, Rick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
All righty. Hey, with moving all the information onto the clouds, as we're talking about, a concern I have is that if we don't physically hold the information either on disk or in books, how do we assure ourselves that we're not going to let 1984 start up?
What a great question. Yeah, book burning's really easy when it's just bits.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question.
I just worry about if they just have the information in the cloud, you lose an iPad, and then you let it go back to the cloud again. Then you look it up later on, you find out that the statistics aren't quite the same because somebody changed it a little bit. They tweaked it.
So you raise a number of interesting issues. Having stuff in the cloud, if you only had a copy in the iPad and you didn't have it in the cloud, you lost the iPad, you lost everything. So at least having it in the cloud is a form of backup, at least, right? But you raise a couple of very interesting issues. You raise the issue of privacy and security, of course. But there's an even a bigger issue when it comes to books, music, things like that. And it happened this week, or maybe it was last week. A woman in Norway had been buying her Amazon books through an account in the UK. And Amazon, well, we don't know why, but for some reason, Amazon decided to disconnect her account, to turn it off. And when they did so, of course, all the books she'd bought for her Kindle were wiped, were gone. They disappeared. She thought she had bought books. She hadn't. She had leased books. This is true of music, movies, TV shows, anything with copy protection in it, DRM. Relies, and we've learned this again and again, and it's a lesson I wish we would learn, relies on the retailer to continue to provide access. This has happened to some games in the past where the company went out of business. The server that authenticated the game, because, you know, with copy protection, you have to phone home and get authenticated. Even with Windows, you have to phone home and authenticate. If that authentication server is down, you can't run the program. If Amazon decides that you, for whatever reason, don't deserve an Amazon account, that's it. She wrote to Amazon. She said, what happened? They said, your account is associated with another account that we feel is breaking our terms of service. They didn't even say she broke the terms of service, just that her account was somehow associated with another account that did. And so we're discontinuing your account. She asked for clarification. They said, sorry, we can't tell you any more than that. And by the way, don't make another account. We're watching you, and you can't do it. Go somewhere else for your ebooks. But if you look at the terms of service, when you buy a book from Amazon, you're not buying a book. You're buying the right to read the book. It's not a real book. So that's one of the big issues. I want to talk some more about the downside of the cloud when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Go to meeting. It's a great way to meet face-to-face when you're not in the same place. It's getting everybody on the same page with their great screen sharing, but also seeing each other face-to-face with HD faces. And this is one of the things that really makes GoToMeeting sing. I love GoToMeeting. We do it all the time. It lets you see your team. You could start a meeting on a Mac or PC, and I think you can now start a meeting on an iPad as well. You can join a meeting on almost anything, Mac, PC, iPad, iPhone, Android, tablet. And if you're on an iPad, it'll use your camera. It'll use your camera. I guess you can present from the iPad. That's it. This is so sweet. Let me go back a page. They have and this is one of the things I like about Citrix. They constantly improve the product, and you always get newer versions and sweet stuff. I want you to try it free for 30 days. To attend a meeting on an iPad or an iPhone is so cool. So cool. It's easy to launch meetings, easy to start one, easy to join them anywhere you are. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Visit gotomeeting.com. Use our promo code TECH. So you can now invite people to meetings from the iPad. I love this. This is new. And from the iPhone. Visit gotomeeting.com. 30 days free when you click the try it free button and use the promo code TECH, T-E-C-H. Gotomeeting.com. See that orange try it free button? Click that and use the promo code T-E-C-H.
Kyle Benham does it again, our musical director.
We're talking about the cloud, and there's ups and downs to the cloud. Now, the up, of course, of cloud is, you know, cloud storage means. And by the way, this Windows RT tablet is a good example. But also the new Amazon tablets, the new Google tablets, none of them have much memory because you're expected to use the cloud storage. In Google's case, Google Drive. In the Windows RT case, the Windows tablet, SkyDrive. So when you get a Windows RT tablet, you get 100 gigs of SkyDrive storage with it, right? 100 gigs! That's a lot of storage. So that means when you save a document, when you're using Microsoft Office, for instance, on the Windows Surface, Windows RT tablet, you don't save it to the tablet. I mean, you could, but really what you want to do is save it to your SkyDrive. And it's always there. Now, our caller raises this specter of, well, okay, then you lose a tablet, and there's mysterious changes to your document. That, I think, is the least of your worries. There may be some privacy concerns, I guess. People who use Google, I know, often say, oh, Google spies on us. I think in some ways you're safer from a company like Google because the risks are higher for Google. If people didn't trust Google with their data, they're out of business, right? So Google is going to, in fact, bends over backwards to protect people because they're constantly being watched by the government, by the Department of Justice, by the European Union, by users, by hackers. They don't dare do anything like that. Much more concerning to me are the people spying on you that people don't think about, like your internet service provider. When you load stuff up to the cloud, who does it go through? Your ISP. And in most cases, an ISP has more access to your stuff than Google does. So I you know, the privacy issue is certainly appropriate to raise, but I would say you might be surprised at who you should be worrying about. Government agencies, police agencies, your internet service provider. You know, the FBI has asked, and most ISPs comply, the ISPs to save 2 years' worth of your internet access, just in case. And in fact, a law has been proposed. It hasn't been approved yet, but Congress has been looking at the idea of forcing that. I wouldn't be more worried about that than about whether Google's going to change a number in your spreadsheet. I feel very comfortable storing my data on SkyDrive, storing my data on Google Drive. I don't have a problem with that. Amazon has their own service. I think that's fine. But it's not inappropriate to consider privacy issues. Not at all. You know, we need to protect our privacy, certainly. But the idea of a computer that, you want privacy? All right, how would you do that? Well, don't connect to the internet at all. Just have your computer and only you. But it's not very useful, is it? It's kind of the trade we make to have functionality and usability, and the portability is you got to trust somebody. It's like life. You can go through, if you don't trust anybody, you can survive in life, but you won't have much of a life. You got to trust that your milk is pure, your meat is safe, that the driver is not going to plow into you as you walk down the street. We live in a world where we have to trust other people. Now, you can go up in the mountains and milk your own cow and raise your own food, not trust a soul, but you're not going to have much of a life. And I think it's very similar. It's a similar analogy, but because technology's new and we're not used to it, and it's very easy to get all scared about the spooky specter of people spying on us. And we forget, we trust all the time. That's life. And the functionality, the usability, the power of the mobile phone, the mobile device, the tablet, the iPad is it doesn't happen until you trust the cloud. So I don't really think that you don't need to worry about somebody changing a number in your spreadsheet. And fortunately, good tools exist in technology for protecting yourself, for encrypting your data, making sure that only you can see it. So you don't even, I think you're actually safer in the cloud than you are walking down the street. Let's be honest. Let's face it. You're probably safer in the cloud than you are in your own bathtub in your house. 8888, ask Leo. That's, I mean, I think that people kind of get a little hysterical over technology. There's a term that's used by sociologists called moral panic. And it happens whenever there's new technology. When cars were first invented, many folks, even intelligent folks, believed that going too fast in a car was bad for women, that they would leave their wombs behind because they were going so... you think this is made up, but it's not. And it's called moral panic. And the term that's often used is, but what about the women and children? And I think if you look at the internet, same thing. What about our kids? And it's the same kind of psychology that happens whenever there's new technology. It's scary for people. And it's very easy for us to say, well, yes, okay, it's fine for me, but what about the women and children? What about them? Think of the children. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. We're going to get back to the phones in a second. David's in St. Louis. Just got a Mac Mini. I wonder if he got the new one. He wants to know if he could use it to host a website. Well, yes and no. Here he is, David in St. Louis, Missouri. Hello, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I've been following you for years. It's an honor to talk to you.
Thank you. It's nice to talk to you.
I just bought this is probably a silly question. I just bought the 2012 Mac Minis.
Awesome.
Love it. Got the version.
You already got it?
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. I guess I didn't realize they had them in store. So did you go to an Apple store to get it?
Apple store.
Great.
Just walked in and they had one and I walked out with it.
I did not realize that they were already available. That's great. So which one did you get?
I got the one set up for configured for OS X server.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So this is interesting. This is an amazing thing. And the difference between OS X Mountain Lion and OS X server is that server is a server. It lets you serve data to the network or to the internet.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to it. One of the things that and I'm just now getting into it today. I've got my own call it a vanity domain, what have you. But I've been having a small company in Switzerland host my mail server for me, and I'd like to get that back and host it myself, and then also host my domain on this little Mac Mini if I can maybe serve up a web page, but. And here's the silly part. It's sitting right now on a NATed IP address because it's on my personal network.
Yeah,
got a cable modem through a WAP to my server. So is it even possible?
Yeah, it's totally possible using something called DynDNS, DynDNS. The problem is you don't have a static IP address and it's NATed, which means it's inside your network. So you will DM, I'm going to get techie real quick because we're running out of time, and then when we come back, I'll talk about why you don't want to do this. Well, you DMZ the Mac Mini, use DynDNS to point to it, and then you can absolutely run your own website from it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, all that jazz. Our digital photographer, Chris Marquardt, joins us in half an hour, 33 after the hour. We're going to review our assignment, Faces. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. We've been talking about so many different things, but I want to get back to David in St. Louis. He bought a Mac Mini. You bought the server version. Now, really, here's the difference. The guys who are serving your website in Switzerland are serving it from a network operations center. It's air conditioned, backed up, power backed up. It's got a lot of bandwidth. You're going to be in your closet. The biggest issue is going to be your upstream bandwidth. So, David, what kind of internet connection do you have?
I'm actually pretty good. I've got it, and I'm not expecting a lot of traffic on this. But I've got a 100 megabit connection. So, and
100 megabit down. How much up?
I think it's 5 megabit.
Okay. See, you don't, the 100 megabits meaningless because you're serving. So
yeah.
It's how much is going out, not how much is coming in. 100 megabits, great, but 5 megabits, you know, if more than say 100 people hit your site, it's going to go down.
Yeah, and again, this is it's a vanity site. I just want to serve email accounts and maybe host a small website.
The email server is fine, except you got to check with your internet service provider, because it may not. First of all, with doing a web server, but also an email server, may violate their terms of service. And the reason they especially are cautious about email servers, they don't want you to set up a spam service through them, right? So, for instance, many internet service providers block port 25. That's the SMTP, the mail protocol port, which would prevent your mail server from working. So you want to make sure that it's okay with them.
Okay, good point.
And you're not in Switzerland. Your server's in Switzerland, right?
Yeah.
You're going to serve it from St. Louis. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to serve from St. Louis. Right. I'm going to do it right out of my house.
Right. So that would be one issue. If you have a more enlightened internet service provider, if it's not Comcast, but it's someone more enlightened, they may in fact also offer a static IP address, which makes it very simple. The reason that you need to use Dyn DNS is because you can't guarantee your IP address won't change. It won't change often, but it might change unless you've ordered or paid for a static IP address. And that's why people do that, so that they can say, my server's at this address. And then in your router, you have to say, you know, the easiest thing is to say just DMZ the server. The safest thing to do is to actually configure the router properly and say, allow incoming traffic on port 80. For HTTP, and port 25 for SMTP, and port 110 for POP, and you know, open those ports and say, when that stuff comes in, go to that Mac Mini. It's not too complicated. The real reason you want to do this is to learn all of this.
Sure.
Right? That's the fun part. You know, it's easy. Frankly, it's not expensive, and it's easy to get somebody to host a server and a mail. That's cheap.
Yeah, but it gives me then I can set it up so it's easy to VPN in, and I can do some file sharing, and
it's really mostly to learn, you know, to see what this is like, to become a sysadmin, a webmaster. I mean, you can totally do it, and since you've got the server version of the Mac Mini, I'd say go for it. Check your terms of service, make sure they let you do that. You don't want to lose internet service over this. And if they do, you might check into the cost of a static IP address. That'll simplify things. If not, Dyn DNS is a service that basically you'll run a little stub on your Mac Mini that checks its IP address periodically and updates it on a Dyn DNS database, and you'll direct people to that database on the way to you.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yep. And this is a great project. Again, it's not something I'd recommend for anybody who just wants to get it done. But if you know, running your own server is not ideal. But if you want to learn it, this is the way to do it. Thanks, David.
Yeah, it gives me the flexibility to do a few things.
You can do things. Yeah, I like to SSH into my stuff. I like to, you know, I like some capabilities that if you're a sophisticated user, it's great. Hey, thanks, David.
Yeah,
enjoy. All righty. Enjoy that new Mac Mini. I'm a little jealous. I was looking at those. Those are pretty sweet. Pretty cool. Glenn in Georgia. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Glenn.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. A real pleasure. I am what they call a mature IT guy. I don't say old. So, mature.
Me too. Interesting. I just found out I'm a senior citizen.
I know, myself included, so I sympathize with you.
We got to change that term to apply to people who are at least older than me.
Oh, that's right. I'm a little bit older than you, but I enjoy matter of fact, my first computer I worked on was a Spectra 7045.
Wow. Now, senior citizen is always somebody 10 years older than you. That's got to be the rule.
Or my father.
Or your father, yeah. That's the rule.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm calling you. I really enjoy your show. I'm calling you because I want to buy my wife a lovely gift, and I'm touring between the Acer ZenBook UX31A and the new Acer Aspire.
I would pause because I think the new Windows 8 Acers, for instance, are gorgeous.
Oh, that's what I'm looking. Oh, okay. Is it not out yet?
Yeah, I guess it's out if you go to the right place. You want one with Windows 8 on it, okay? And I think especially for your wife, I'm going to be very, very sexist here, but especially for your wife, I think for a now you're an IT guy, you may say, no, I want desktop Windows. But I think for a normal person, and I've come around on this. I wasn't fully skeptical on Windows 8. I was nervous about it. It is a major shift for Microsoft to make.
Major shift. I agree with you.
And I think for people like you and me who are old-timey tech guys, you know, we're going to say, where's my desktop? Where's my start button? But I think for a normal person, this is a very compelling interface. I have to say, though, it is not that compelling with mouse alone. It really wants touch. This is a touch interface. Okay. And so I would take a look at – I would go to – you're in Georgia. I don't know if – there probably is a Microsoft pop-up store in Atlanta. I don't know how near that is to you.
Yes, I believe there is.
I would go to the pop-up store. First of all, they'll have all the new Windows 8 computers from the various manufacturers, but they'll also have the Microsoft Surface RT, and that might be an interesting choice for her, depending on what she wants to do.
She is a heavy internet user, and she is a heavy typist.
Well, then, you know, she's also going to want to try this unusual keyboard. Now, I think that there's two keyboards for the Surface RT. There's the touch and there's the type. The one I bought was the type, and it is about as good as a laptop keyboard. The keys actually travel. They're individual. It's not a Chiclet keyboard. It's not an IBM PC Junior. You'll remember that. And it even has a trackpad and left and right click. But it is more of a tablet. And if you, it sounds like you're looking at the very light ultrabooks. This is an interesting play.
She travels with a brick.
Yeah. This would be so much better. So much better. But I would also look at, I was very impressed. I watched the Windows announcement on Thursday, and they showed some beautiful, interesting form factors for this. My only caution would be, I would say Windows 8 is a great choice for most people, but make sure you get it with touch. Even if you get a desktop or a laptop, even if she will mostly be using the keyboard and the mouse, the ability to reach out, and I notice this myself as I use the iPad more, I keep touching the laptop screen. I want it to be touchable. You know, there's certain things where it just begs to be touched.
Yes.
And I think not having that capability on Windows 8 will end up being a detriment. You'll feel like, gosh, I just can't do all the things that, you know, it's just not, it doesn't feel as natural. So, yeah, you've got some good choices there. The Asus ZenBook is my favorite Windows 7 Ultrabook. So look at the Windows 8 version of that for sure.
And how do you feel about the Acer?
Acer's good. It's not, again, I've looked at the Windows 7 versions. It's not as good, in my opinion, as the Asus. I really like the Asus. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm embarrassed to admit this, but before the show came on here, I was building my own Ford. I shouldn't admit this. I'm really excited about this new Fusion. The Fusion Energy. I'm pretty sure now. If I can get on the list, I'm going to trade the Fusion 2013 Fusion Energy is coming out this week. Or at least they're going to do a demo. I don't think you can actually build it yet on the Ford site, but it's a plug-in hybrid. So that means you can run on battery. It's basically electric in town, and then you use it as a hybrid as you head out of town. And it gets 108 miles per gallon E. That's the new kind of electric miles per gallon. It's the highest MPGe I've seen anywhere. And you know, these are nice, these Fusions. This is, I'm pretty sure it's a Lincoln MKV chassis. So it's a nice big car, very comfy car. Ooh. Anyway, I mentioned that. And one of the first things I said is, well, but can I get Ford Sync on it? And of course they said, yes. Yes, here's the good news. Sync is available on every 2012, 2013 Ford vehicle sold in the U.S., including the 2012 Focus, that 2013 Energy. I think it's standard on the Energy. Why would you want Sync? Oh, baby, let me tell you. So the idea is, you know, when you get in a car these days, you don't want to feel like you're going back to the 19th century. You don't want to disconnect from all your stuff. At the same time, we got to consider safety. We got to consider, you know, distraction. You don't want to distract the drivers. So what Ford does is it's all voice command. You can do everything with voice command. So you keep your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road, but you can do almost anything. Not just dial the phone. You control your music. You can choose genre, album, artist, playlist, song title, all using voice commands. Go to the site, Ford.com/technology, and look at some of the commands that you can do. I mean, these are incredible. It is very, very smart. These are all sync commands. You're talking to the car, and it's doing, you can set the temperature, you can call people, you can say Canadian soft rock. I'm not sure I'd want to, but you could. And it would play Canadian soft rock. You could say, play similar music as you're listening to a song. It'll play more music like that. You can even bookmark songs, go home and buy them on iTunes. It's really cool. I would not, frankly, buy a car that didn't have Ford Sync on it. Sync is just one of many reasons you're going to want a Ford. Go further. Visit your Ford dealer or Ford.com/technology. And I'm sending people to Ford dealers to test drive the sync. Just go in there and say, I want to test drive the sync. See what they say. You might have to drive a car too. And as soon as I get the energy, I'll take you for a ride. I'm so excited. Go further. I like their new slogan. Go for, well, you know, I didn't have the Ford. There we go. There, see?
You might ignore me, but doctors adore me. I got my Medicaid, got my Medicare. I'm a certified citizen. Excuse me while I take my nap.
You don't like 55, baby. Don't like your jiving, just don't give me that. Suddenly you're a senior citizen. I think 55 is a new 28. That's my plan. 8888, ask Leo. All the 28-year-olds are going, no. Dan in Ontario, you're... Did I handle everything we were going to talk about? I was taking a look at the new Windows 8 devices on the Microsoft Store, store.microsoft.com, and you can at least look at them all. And there are really some amazing choices here. All of them, I think, now have touchscreens. And I think that this is one of the things I was saying, and now I feel vindicated. I was saying, don't get a Windows 7 device and upgrade to Windows 8. Get a Windows 8 device. I think you'll be happier, frankly. Because I think touch becomes so integral to this. This is what Microsoft's decided. They have basically decided, hey, you know what? The tablet is it. This is where the world is going. We're in a post-PC world, and even with our desktop operating system now, we're going to kind of go in that tablet direction. So I would, you can go online, store.microsoft.com, look there. Atlanta does have a full Microsoft store, not a pop-up store, so you'll have the opportunity there. All right. Apologies. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for being patient while I finish that one up. What's your name again? I forgot. Oh, Dan.
Dan.
Hi, Dan. Leo.
Hi, Leo. I'm trying to do a factory restore on my computer. I don't have my software for it, my CDs, and I know it's on the hard drive, and when I go to boot and F8, then you can usually go down and you can find where you want to go. I can't find it anywhere on my hard drive.
Who's the manufacturer?
That's a Gateway.
Gateway. I'm going to have to ask the chat room's assistance here on the Gateway. So normally when you get a new computer, there's...
This is about 4 years old, 5 years
yeah,
old.
Yeah. What they often will say is make your recovery disks, and they'll give you a program that will run and run once and then let you make a recovery set of recovery disks. That's what they was most common 4 years ago. My favorite choice, which Microsoft strongly discouraged, they were so worried about piracy, is to actually have it come with an install disk. But nobody
well,
does
I've
that.
Done this. I've done this many times before to clean it up and stuff. But this time, I can't do it.
So all interesting. So in the past, you've been able to hit F8 and recover.
Right.
But it no longer works.
Right. It doesn't even recover. Doesn't even show up in there. I'm not in front of my computer now, so I can't tell you what it's doing. but it's not there.
Well, that's if it has worked in the past and it no longer works, the only thing I could think of is that perhaps the recovery partition has disappeared. It needs what it does, as you figured out, is it does save the Windows install stuff, and many computers do this now, on a hidden partition of the computer. And you can get into that either by taking it and making disks, or in some cases, not all, hitting a special key combination and saying, hey, I want you to run the recovery. A couple of people are telling me, try F11. Not F8. We're talking about function keys here. F8 may have worked, but it's apparently not the normal thing. Some people are saying, "Now, okay, chat room, I want you to think carefully before you type. I want you to think about Gateway from 4 years ago, and then tell me, because I'm hearing everything from Alt F10, Alt F11, F10, F8, Alt F8. Chat room. Chapman, do me a favor.
It's a patch.
Come up with ones. let's see here. Frequently asked questions, Gateway support documents. How can I tell if my Gateway computer shipped with the system recovery solution? Do you see an F11 prompt after completing power on self-test? There is a system recovery option on the start menu. Well, that won't help you because, of course, you're not able to do that. A recovery partition is located on the hard drive as a D partition. It is a notebook or desktop that shipped with Windows XP Service Pack 2 or a new computer purchased from Gateway after November 2004. Sounds like you're going to look for F11. But you might try some other key strokes. But Jay Freezer and others are telling me, yes, it's F11. F11. Not Command Option Shift PR. No. if nothing else works, Dan, you can, of course, call Gateway. Who owns Gateway now? Acer? They still have the Gateway brand. You can call Gateway and say, "I need help me." And for, I think, a fairly reasonable cost, $10, $20, they'll send you a set of recovery disks. Pismo's saying, you know, some Gateways are F8, but I think I would try F11. And, of course, this is all ancient history now. They all do something different now. Good luck, Dan. Adam in Hesperia, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Leo. I'm having an issue troubleshooting my internet connection with Verizon Fios. I can load some web pages if I just sit down at the computer and start browsing the internet. I'll be torrenting or playing video games online. I can even run a ping, a continuous ping, and everything's all good and golden.
Good.
But sometimes I'll click on certain pages, and the web page will not load.
Hmm.
And then I'll open a new tab and then just click a bunch of random bookmarks. So I'm loading a bunch of stuff at once, and nothing loads. My continuous ping is still showing good.
That's interesting. Sounds like a DNS issue. So ping, as you obviously know, because you're using ping... Ping, you do a specific... are you pinging a number or pinging a name?
I ping a name.
Oh,
I ping a couple of websites.
But if you ping yahoo.com, you actually are going through DNS. The computer will say, okay, I don't know what yahoo.com is. Let me look it up on the domain name system, and it'll look it up. It'll either do it on your computer or the Verizon computers. And then it'll give that IP address to the ping command, which will then say, hello, server. And the server will say, hello, ping, and you'll get a round trip time, and you'll say, yes, everything's working. So if you're able to ping yahoo.com, but your browser still can't pull up yahoo.com, you might have other issues going on. How many computers do you have on the router?
On the router, there's two desktops and a number of wireless devices, cell phones.
So some Fios routers do have... a limited NAT table, according to R. Chandra in our chat room, which means you would have a limited number of devices you could put on there. It may be that the extra devices that you're putting on there are actually breaking the router temporarily.
Continuous connections? Because I have a lot of stuff. I have my router set up to
not continuous connections. Because you're so. Let's say you've got a phone, a tablet, your refrigerator, your microwave, a couple of desktop computers, a couple of laptops. Each of them takes up an entry in what's called the NAT table, the Network Address Translation Table. Size limitations on that NAT table would cause the router to choke. So you may have too many devices on there. That's what the chat room thinks. I think they might be right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's an interesting version. It sounds like a live version of Kodachrome.
You got it.
Of course, Kodachrome is the theme song for my good friend Chris Marquardt, who is a professional photographer, runs one of the best photography podcasts out there, the Tips from the Top Floor podcast, which you can get at his website, either tfttf.com or chrismarquardt.com. And it's time for Chris to do a review. Hi, Chris.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going well. You're ready to take a look at some of the submissions for our assignment, which was faces. Am I right?
Yes, face, and people brought. I mean, we have 99 people who, or 99 submissions for this assignment, which is pretty awesome.
99.
I send you a list in the email. So
that's great. I'll check.
You want to have a look there?
Yeah, that's amazing.
And it's. Yeah, it's amazing the amount of turnout here. I'm really blown away. And we have everything from faces of clocks, faces of animals, faces of people, and like a real good selection of different things here. So
We should just explain what we're doing here. And I know it's kind of nutty to do this because it is a radio show. But what we really are trying to do is get everybody to go out and take pictures. We encourage you to take pictures. And so in order to do that, we give you a reason to take pictures by giving you an assignment. This is not a competition. I want to be very clear, there are no prizes. We just ask you to go out and shoot some shots and submit them to our Flickr group. And then once a month, Chris takes a look at them and we talk about them. And I know, it's crazy. It's the radio. We'll just describe them. We will put a link to them, though, in our show notes at techguylabs.com. All right, number one is from, what did you say, Dusan Mall?
Dusan Mall, I guess, yeah. Dusan Maletic sounds from somewhere from Eastern Europe, I guess. And it's just a face. Okay, this is kind of an unusual thing because usually you have like the eyes open and people looking nicely into the camera in a portrait situation. But this is a singer,
his eyes are closed.
With his eyes are closed.
His mouth is open.
you just can tell how much he's into what he's doing there. He disappears in his music.
He's a New Orleans singer. What's interesting, though, this is a very grainy picture. It's obviously, it was either, you know, captured quickly on a camera phone or just there wasn't a lot of light. But because of the emotion and the feeling, the technical issues just don't get in the way, do they?
Not really. Even if that grain is an issue, I think I guess this guy probably put the grain in there on purpose.
You think it's intentional?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it doesn't look like real film grain to me,
yeah,
but
I guess you're right.
That doesn't really matter. I mean, it just has so much emotion in it.
I love it.
So some of the blur in the picture, there's some motion blur in there, and that does not matter. It's the face really tells the story. Faces are really good in telling stories.
And apparently, by the way, this is, according to some of our chat room, Onkyo Rep in our chat room says, this is actually very famous locally New Orleans singer.
Oh, he is. Yeah, I've never been there. So
yeah, I mean, I've been there, but I didn't get to go to the jazz festival, any of the musical events, and that's what I'd love to do. Very nice, very nice. Thank you, Dusan Mall.
So the next picture is by, how do we pronounce that name? Jotin.
I don't know. Jotin, Z H O T I N.
Anyway, this is the old train station in Minnesota. And it is, well, it's a house. It's the front of a house, but it is a face at the same time. It has eyes, it has a nose, it has hair, it has a mouth. So it kind of looks at you. Lots of things have faces. If you look around, you will find faces pretty much everywhere you look. We had one submission. The one thing that I, as a European, I'm always kind of fond of are those little power outlets in the United States. Because
they look
those
like
are little,
faces, yeah.
They're little scared faces, you know? They have this look in their face.
I never thought of that.
I cannot unsee these since I saw them once as faces. I always see them as little faces. And the same is true for houses, for cars, for, well, look around you. You will see faces everywhere. So a nice photo project is to go out and shoot faces that are not really faces.
Now, this one, this next one I really like, from RG69olds.
Yes, I think that really has a lot of feeling to it. And
technically kind of a failure. There's stuff in the way.
No, I don't think so.
No?
I don't think so. No. No, but what happens? Okay, what we see is this woman looking over her shoulder. She has a mobile phone in her hand. And she's clearly, she just discovered that someone's taken her photo. I don't think that's a posed photo. I think actual candid picture.
Yeah. And she's saying, what the heck?
What's going on here, right? And you see this weird kind of reflection in front of her that covers up part of her face slightly, but that gives you some more depth, that gives you some more information. That is context. That gives you the information that he's probably shooting that through a window of some sort because there is this reflection. So it adds part to the story in this picture. And the fact that this is a completely candid picture, her eyes face the camera straight on almost, makes it a really strong picture. I really like how that whole kind of story unfolds. And I think everyone who looks at that picture will probably have their own story for the picture. You kind of have to make up the story because there's not that much information. The picture is good at leaving things out. You just see that expression. And yeah, everyone will probably have a story ready when they see that picture.
It's really interesting because two out of these three pictures I would have said are technically marred, but you say no, that's part of it. And
I like a certain amount of dirt in my pictures,
yeah.
You know.
I think you make a good point. Yeah, it's okay. In fact, maybe I shouldn't reject those pictures that have little errors, or because if it adds to the feeling, the emotion, the story, it communicates. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, you know, everyone's trying to take those super clean pictures and sometimes a bit of lens flare. We talked about lens flare a few weeks ago. Lens flare is a good thing. So nothing wrong with a bit of grit in the picture.
Well, thank you to all three of you. In fact, to all 99 of you who submitted.
Oh, this one was a hard one to make a choice. This one was really hard. Lots of awesome stuff.
Oh, I love it. We've got so many great people now participating in these assignments and so many wonderful images of faces that I'm thrilled. So, Chris, let's keep doing it. You got another assignment for us? Yeah.
I have another assignment. I got an email from our moderator, Renee, who kind of looks at the pictures, makes sure that the rules are followed and everything. And she asked me to remind people that they should take new pictures for the assignment. It's really important to not just pull one out of your archive that you had there for years. But one of the reasons for doing these assignments is to go out, to give you a reason to go out and shoot and learn and become a better photographer. And you only will become a better photographer by doing it. It's like learning riding a bicycle. You do this by doing it and not by reading about it. So new assignment, go out, take a new picture. And the new assignment is weather. I thought, I wish everyone's gonna be safe. Yeah. Don't put yourself in harm's way to take a tsunami picture or something. But weather is just always around us. Weather can be nice. Weather can be rainy. There can be storm. Winter is coming up, so some areas might already start to get some snow. So weather, I think,
Love
is
it.
A good.
Love
a good
it.
One for this year.
And
this
go to the Flickr site and look at all the pictures. It's flickr.com, the Tech Guy Group. So many great images. Let's see yours next time. Thank you, Chris Marquardt. ChrisMarquardt.com. More of your calls right after this. Hey, I want to talk about stamps.com quickly while that other Leo is talking about something else. I don't know. He's talking about carbonite or something. Let me talk about postage. Postage sounds like a mundane topic unless you do a lot of mailing, and then it becomes very important. Do you lease a postage meter? Do you pay for the ink, that special ink? You don't need that. I always thought, oh, there's some magic in the ink, like the electronic reading machines needs. No, they don't need special ink. You don't need a postage meter. You don't need to pay to lease. You'll save up to 80% on a postage meter costs with stamps.com because there's no long-term contract. There's no hidden fees. There's no reset fees. There's no extra hardware to buy or lease. You've got a computer. You've got a printer, right? then you can use stamps.com. In fact, I'm going to get you the USB scale. That makes it even better. You have the scale connected to your computer. You plop your letter or your package on there up to 25 pounds. You can do a bigger one if you have a bigger scale, but that's what you do with the stamps.com USB scale. And then stamps.com will either print out a stamp, print out a, you know, a little sticker, or even print right on the envelope, print the mailing label. If you're using QuickBooks, if you're an Amazon or eBay or Etsy or PayPal seller, all it will just take the data right from the site and boom, you're good to go. With stamps.com, you don't have to go to the post office ever again, not to get stamps, not to mail packages, not even to get forms like the international mailing. It does it all for you, fills the forms out and everything. I want you to go to stamps.com right now. Click that radio microphone and then use the offer code TECHGUY, okay? And that will get you a special deal that only Tech Guy listeners get. $110 value, including up to $55 in free postage. Wow. The scale is free. You pay shipping and handling. It's $5. But they'll give you a $5 supply kit to make up for that. And a four-week trial. At the end of the trial, the scale is yours to keep. You don't have to sign up. But I think you will want to. Stamps.com. Use the offer code TECHGUY for a $110 bonus offer, including $55 free postage. That's a good deal. Come back home. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Website is techguylabs.com. It's good to keep that in mind because that's a great place to go if you want information about something we've talked about. For instance, let's say you want to see those images. They'll all be on techguylabs.com that we were just talking about with Chris Marquardt. Or you can't remember where to go for the your submission for the next round of our photo assignment, techguylabs.com. Maybe you want to get in the chat room. We've got a link there. If you can't remember the phone number, we've got a link there. It is, and if you have a comment, this is mostly what I'd love you to do. If you listen and you say, hey, Leo's wrong, you're full of it, or I got a better idea, or what about this? The best way to do that is to go to techguylabs.com and make a comment. What we do is while the show's going on, James DeRuvo is taking quick rough notes so we can get those links up as fast as possible, even during the show. And this is episode 922, so you'd go to 922 for this date, and all those would be there. And then afterwards, we make a video, a YouTube video of the show with all the questions and answers, and Josh Windisch in my office then takes that and adds that video to each of the questions and answers and fleshes out the answer. And so you can go back at any time and see a video of the question, a video of the answer, or a video of Chris Marquardt's segment or whatever, and then, you know, respond in kind on the comments. So I really think that I'm hopeful this is going to become a great resource. And by the way, I want to emphasize this. Always free, always available. This is, you know, we're doing this for one reason. We want to make something that is valuable to everybody. I'm not going to charge people for access to this ever. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Website is techguylabs.com. Back to the phones we go. Henry in Escondido, California. You're next. Hi, Henry.
Hello, Leo.
Hey.
Yes. I have Windows 7, and it's got two Internet Explorers, a 32 and a 64-bit.
That's right.
To me, I should be using the 64, but I do a fair amount with the FCC on their webpage using online forms, which requires Java, and I can't seem to load the Java onto the 64.
You nailed it. In fact, the reason they provide both is some plugins, Flash and Java leap to mind, won't work with a 64-bit. Now, I do think there's a 64-bit of version of Java out. So I do think, but you know, that's why they include 32 and 64-bit versions of Internet Explorer.
I tried to delete the 32, and it won't go away.
No, you need both. And Flash is another example. You can't use Flash, at least you couldn't, with a 64-bit version of IE. Frazier, do you know if Java, I know there's 64-bit Java. Yeah. So I think if you had the 64-bit Java, you could continue to use it with your 64-bit IE. And you could also upgrade to IE10, which should be coming out soon. Now, IE10 did come out with Windows 8. So anybody with Windows 8 is using it, and Microsoft has said, yes, we're going to make it available for Windows 7 users at some point. So either go get a new version of Java, or it's fine to use 32-bit IE. There's no, you know, this whole 64, 32-bit, it's not twice as good. there's no real reason why you shouldn't use the 32-bit version of IE.
So, okay, I understand. That's what I've been doing, and it just seemed to me since the 64 was there, I should be using it.
It doesn't. You know, I think we look at a number and we say, oh, well, 64 is twice as good as 32. It's not. It doesn't. It's not, there's no reason. You know, Microsoft started putting out 64-bit versions of Windows many moons ago. And most of the processors, even at that time that we were using, were capable of 64-bit. All the processors today are 60. All the desktop processors are 64-bit processors. But what does that mean? From the point of view of the end user, not much. The only advantage of a 64-bit version of Windows is it can address more RAM. So 32-bit version of Windows, not IE, but of Windows, is limited to 4 gigabytes of RAM. Some of that is even used up by the system. So if you have a 4-gig machine, you won't even get to all 4 gigabytes of your RAM. If you have an 8-gig machine and you want to see all 8 gigabytes of your RAM, you need a 64-bit version of Windows. That's pretty much it. I mean, literally, that's it. So with, you know, there's no real advantage to using 64-bit IE. As far as I can tell, you get a bigger address space, and as time goes by, we want that, but it's not going to make a big difference in the browser. Virgil in Denver's coming up next. We're going to help Virgil. He wants a good email program. I want to talk about that because often the email program that comes with your computer is not the one you should be using. So we'll talk about that. For instance, Microsoft Surface RT doesn't have Outlook. Virgil, Denver, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Virgil.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Well, I remember a couple of months ago you were talking about a program, I believe it was called VoiceOver by Apple.
Okay.
And I am severely visually impaired, and I would like to have some kind of a program on my PC that will audibly read my email for me.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Is there
any such thing available for a PC?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, PCs come with something called Narrator. If you have a recent version of Windows, what version of Windows are you running?
Windows 7.
Yeah, it's got something called Narrator in it. You turn that on in the accessibility control panel, and it will read you anything, including your email. There's just a keystroke combination, and that's built in. Now, there are certainly, and many blind people use screen readers, there are certainly screen readers that are even more capable. The best known is called JAWS. These are not inexpensive, and I think that's partly because people usually get help either from the state or a federal government or their insurance company and paying for these. It's a limited market, so these companies tend to charge an awful lot for specialized software like that. There is open source screen reader software as well. I'm not sure. I don't use it, so I don't know, but I'm not sure if it's as good as the commercial versions. I would think that it's getting there if it isn't already. NVDA is the best known. NVDA-project.org. This is free open source screen reader software. NVDA stands for Non-Visual Desktop Access. It's designed for Windows, supports 35 languages, and it's free. So you might want to, you know, Narrator's built in, and Narrator gets the job done. But if you want something more capable, something, for instance, that can allow you to control the computer and so forth, JAWS is the big commercial program that lots of people know about, but I would take a look at NVDA. And I'd love to hear from anybody who's blind or visually impaired who uses it. Let me know how well that works. Orca is another one they're telling me in the chat room that's open source, O-R-C-A. I like this because that's a GNOME project, so that's a Linux program. I like this because I think that these programs are so expensive that it kind of leaves some people out. And I think it's important that everybody have access. Nath says, I've done all my IT studies with NVDA, and it works great. Hey, that's great. Thank you, Nath, for that recommendation. News is coming up at the top of the hour. I know on the East Coast you really want to hear this, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, more of your calls. Leo Lepore here. I am the Tech Guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Lepore here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, and mobile computing. That's the word of the hour, the day, the week, probably the year, certainly the decade. Mobile is it. We are in a post-PC era. And all you have to do is look at the product announcements this week from Apple, the Mac, or I should say iPad Mini, from Microsoft, the Windows RT tablet, Windows 8, which is very tablet-focused, even on the desktop. Google was going to have a big announcement, their new Android phone, the Nexus, the latest Nexus, and a new tablet, super high-resolution tablet from Samsung. They called that off due to Hurricane Sandy. It was going to be tomorrow in New York City. In fact, I'm told that the place they were going to have it is now an evacuation center in New York City. Yikes. Samsung had their Galaxy Note 2 announcement on Wednesday. That's a phone so big, you might as well call it a tablet. 5-inch screen. It's actually what I call my daily driver, the phone I use these days. Because I like a big screen. I have big fat fingers. And the fact that I can use this, really, my smartphone, I bet you're the same way. My smartphone is much more a computer than it is a phone. Yeah, I make some calls on it. I use it for messaging much more, for texting. And I use it as a computer. I use it to browse the web, to share my location on Foursquare and Path, to play chess, to take pictures and share pictures. It's much more a computer. So a big screen for me is something I really like. It's interesting because Samsung and Apple both had their quarterly earnings calls this week. Apple on, I think, Wednesday, Samsung on Thursday, or maybe it's Thursday, Friday. And Apple announced a profit of $8.2 billion, mostly driven by portable devices, iPhone and iPad. Samsung announced a profit of $7.9 million, mostly driven by portable devices, the Galaxy S3 and the Galaxy Note. Samsung, in fact, is cleaning up. I believe now they're very close to selling. They sold 10 million Galaxy Notes in the first year. They expect to sell, I think, 1 million in the first 90 days or more. They're really becoming, in many ways, an equal to Apple. So I got to tell you, it's a mobile world. Yes, Apple announced some new desktop computers, but I think people are focused much more on what they can do with devices they carry around. Well, we could talk about that, or your desktop computer. And I have to point out something. Over the last 2 hours of this show, we've had a number of calls of people problems with desktop computers. Those kinds of problems really are desktop problems, and they're kind of going away, thanks to the move towards tablet and mobile computing. The people who are designing things like Windows RT, the tablet version of the new Microsoft Windows 8, are designing with security in mind. Somebody asked me, yeah, I was thinking getting this Microsoft Surface, which is their new Windows RT-based tablet. It's kind of tablet slash laptop. Do I have to worry about Windows issues the same way I worry about viruses on Windows 7? No. First of all, because you can only use apps that Microsoft sells in the App Store. So much like Apple, they're vetting the apps. But also because the design of this intentionally is more secure. There, you know, when Windows was originally designed, people weren't worried about viruses. That's how old Windows is. Anything new that gets designed, people think long and hard about how do you lock it down? How do you secure it? And we'll see, because, of course, anything that Microsoft makes is always a target for the bad guys. But it's my strong sense, my strong belief that this Surface and the Windows RT tablets, others are making them as well, will be as secure, let's say, as the iPad, which is to say very secure and a lot less prone to the kinds of issues that desktops are prone to. But Nathan still wants a desktop or at least a laptop because he's a gamer. Hi, Nathan. Leo Lepore, the Tech Guy.
Good afternoon.
Good to talk to you.
You too. Yeah, I remember you back when you were on the Screensavers back on Tech TV. That was... good show.
Those were the good days. You know, it's was kind of a transition this week. Remember, Tech TV was purchased by Comcast in 2004. They merged it with their gaming channel, G4, and moved it to L.A. The Screensavers stayed the Screensavers for a little while, but eventually was renamed to Attack of the Show. This week, yes. G4 announced that they are canceling all their remaining tech programming, including Attack of the Show and X-Play, and they want to become the GQ of cable television. I don't know what that means, but it does mean no more technology television, which is sad.
Yeah, I think it's a shame. So the reason that I'm calling today is I am actually an over-the-road truck driver, and I'm kind of in need of a new laptop. The one that I've got, I've had it for about a year. It's a bit beat up. I really like it. It's a Gateway Envy series. I don't know the exact model number off the top of my head. Running Windows 7 with the Core i5 processor. And the games that I tend to like to play are like simulator games such as Flight Sim, Train Sim. And I like a lot of the games that came out in, is embarrassing, like 2004, 2005. So they run really quick on the newer hardware.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm looking to replace the one that I've got. And I was wondering what's kind of out there.
Do you want a tough laptop, or is that an issue? Because I hear you say a year and that thing's beat up. That's pretty quick.
Well, it's more to my abuse, admittedly. The overall toughness of the hardware itself isn't really an issue because it spends most of its time up in the bunk.
So it's not getting banged around or anything.
Right. Right.
You know, I always recommend Lenovo's for business, but for gaming, I'm not sure I'd recommend a Lenovo. They're very well built. They're very nice. I do have to say that you might enjoy, for some of the Sims that you play, I guess games will have to be rewritten to use touch, but you might want to look at some of these new Windows 8 laptops that have touch, because I think in time, a lot of games will be redesigned, and Sims are great with touch. I mean, you use the touch screen like that's, you know, there's the cockpit and you're touching things. And I think it would be great with touch. So, same thing for Train Sim. I mean, you could really be driving the train. So I would look at probably the newer Windows 8 laptops. I don't have a lot of experience with them. I am very we were talking earlier about the Asus Zen. And I think that's a if you want an ultralight, I think that's a beautiful ultralight.
Size and weight aren't really.
You don't care because it's in the bunk. You're driving around. You're not carrying it.
Right, exactly.
Well, if gaming is serious, Alienware, of course, makes gaming laptops, and these things are monsters. Dell has bought Alienware, so it's really a Dell laptop. But they make laptops designed for gamers, and you pointed out and quite rightly that older games run fine because they were designed for older hardware. But if you ever think you might start playing higher-end modern games, might be really nice to have something with a little more power. You pay the price, though. Alienware laptops, you know, kind of the bottom of the line is $1,000, and they go up to $2,000.
Right.
But they're great. I mean, they're i7, they're 32, up to 32 gigs of RAM with very high performance buses, and most importantly, a laptop doesn't normally have a high-end graphics card. You really want to stay away from the Intel graphics on most laptops because it's not going to give you much performance. You want one with NVIDIA graphics built in, a 650 or thereabouts.
Right.
So,
all right.
Yeah, I would look at Alienware if performance, you know, these are nice, but they're heavy. they're desktop replacements, and they glow in the dark, too. Maybe the chat room has some suggestions, too. Asus apparently does make a gaming laptop, so that's good to know. I like Asus's stuff. I think they've done some really good stuff. 88, oh, Falcon Northwest, of course. There's another great gaming company. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Let's hear from you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I am Leo, and I am selling all my stuff at gazelle.com.
You're getting the new iPad? I mean, there isn't. I know, it's not. 7 months is a long time. I just feel it's kind of weird that there is a new iPad. They just came out with one in March. But there are a lot of people say, no, I want this is twice as fast, right? They're really excited about a new iPad. So if it's time, you don't have to decide right now, but I would go to gazelle.com and get a quote. Because I can guarantee you one thing about your third-generation iPad. It's not getting more valuable. Let's just see how much it's worth. Ooh, $495. That could get you a long way toward that new iPad. So why don't you go to Gazelle and get a quote. iPhone? Want to get the iPhone 5? Got an old 4S? Let's see how much that's worth. $215. Throw that in the box. Anything worth more than a buck, Gazelle pays the shipping. Got an old BlackBerry? These can't possibly be worth much. Let's see. Flawless condition. Yes, it's not wet. Yes. What is a BlackBerry Torch worth? $100. Wow. See, I bet you got more in value in those drawers. You got a messy drawer? Every geek has a messy drawer filled with old gadgets. Here's your chance. Dump the gadgets, buy something new. The Gazelle quote is good for 30 days. That gives you time to decide, get the gadget, transfer your data over, and then send it to Gazelle. Now, once you send in your stuff, and you might as well fill the box. Once you send in your stuff, Gazelle's going to give you a few choices for payments. One of them is cash, a check, of course. One of them is PayPal. And one of them is Amazon gift card. And I think the Amazon gift card's a way to go because they'll add 5% to the value. If you've got old phones, old Mac stuff, old iPods, old iPads, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. You know what? Somebody actually wants those, and they'll give you cash for them. Recycle the easy way at gazelle.com. That is just weird. Annie Lennox just sounds so mannish. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Is that Marilyn Manson? Why are you playing this? What is wrong with you? It's my theme song?
For the gamer.
For the gamer. Ah. Blame Kyle Benham, our musical director. If you like his music, or even if you don't, you can get a full playlist on his Google Plus account right after the show. K-Y-L-E space B-E-N-H-A-M. We'll also put it on the show notes at techguylabs.com. Back to the phones we go. Vaughn in Kentucky. Hey, Vaughn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello,
hey,
Vaughn.
Leo.
Hey, Vaughn.
Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thank you for calling.
I do a lot of traveling for work, and I have sensitive data on my computer, which I need to connect from the hotel's internet to VPNs, and I'm concerned about the connection at the hotel with sensitive data. And, you know, it always comes up and says, you know, this is not a secure network.
Yeah, now, so the good news is when you're using the VPN, it's secure. So,
right.
So as soon as as soon as you're connecting to work, anything you're doing, including accessing data at work, that's secure. It's the problem, and I understand your concern, is the stuff that's actually on the hard drive of your computer.
Exactly.
When you're not on the VPN, you are on a network. You're on a network that's shared, and in theory, people could see your stuff. Now, in order for them to see your stuff, you'd either have to turn on file sharing, which I presume is not on.
No.
Yeah. Or there'd have to be a bug in Windows that allowed somebody to get through and access, under normal circumstances, nobody can see what's on your computer unless they either use file sharing or there's a hole in Windows that lets them in. Unfortunately, these holes are not uncommon. So a couple of things. You absolutely want to make sure that you keep Windows up to date, right?
Right.
And if there's something that really needs to be secure, let's say, for instance, that you're a physician and you need to comply with government regulations on patient privacy. You've got patient records on there. In a case like that, you absolutely should use encryption. Because then even if somebody could gain access to your computer, they couldn't gain access to those files, or at least even if they did, they couldn't understand them. They'd be scrambled. So Windows comes with good, strong encryption, and it's reliable and usable. It has some issues in the sense that you have to remember to back up the certificates. It's certificate-based. Otherwise, you won't be able to to access it. So if you want to use Windows' own BitLocker, that's a good choice. You may also have encryption provided by your laptop provider. If there's a TPM, a trusted program module, on the computer, and most business computers from Lenovo and Dell and others have that, that will provide you very strong, safe, secure encryption. Trusted platform module, sorry. The other choice, of course, is to go out and get third-party encryption software. There's very, very good software that's free, open source, so you know there's no government back door. It's called TrueCrypt, TrueCrypt.org. And one of the things you can do with TrueCrypt is make an encrypted folder that only you can get access to with that TrueCrypt password. You can unencrypt it, open the folder, and use it. You should only do that when you are on the VPN. You should immediately close it after you're done so that it's not left unencrypted on the hard drive. I think that's a very strong way to do it as well. So there are many good choices for you. There's stuff from your hardware manufacturer, stuff from Microsoft, and then open source TrueCrypt. All three of them are basically the same in terms of security.
Do you know anything about the D-Link? DIR 505, it's a piece of hardware that you can put between your computer and the network.
Yeah. So, yeah, let me I think it's a router firewall, right?
Right.
It's just a little bit more security. It's not a bad idea. I actually had carried something like that around for a long time. The idea is it gives you a little bit more security. But again, if you're not using encryption, you're relying on the strength of Windows and the strength, in this case, of D-Link. And it's unknown. That's an unknown quantity. There could be bugs in there.
Okay.
So I would use encryption. It's not a bad idea to use both. I mean, why not make it hard for somebody to get through?
So if you have a lot of user IDs and passwords that you have to keep up with, what's your recommendation?
Yeah, I would encrypt. I would encrypt. Yeah, it's certainly a good idea to have, basically the D-Link and other. This is a router, so it is a good idea because it's isolating you from the other people in the hotel. When you're especially if you're joining a hotel network, you're on a LAN with everybody else in the hotel. So having that external router like the D-Link 505 is a further barrier. But if, you know, there's a bug in Windows and or in file sharing, somebody could still get through that. So it's really good to encrypt. I'm sorry to say, but was it Delaware? Social security numbers were just leaked by one of the states. This is a huge problem because your social security number is basically a gateway to your identity online and can be used to hack you in miserable ways. And 3.6 million social security numbers were released, stated by the state of South Carolina recently. That's three. The governor announced this is not a good day for South Carolina on Friday. So they had, like you, it was probably somebody with all those social security numbers. Oh, and by the way, 387,000 credit card numbers. Somebody had it on a laptop probably, right? And it was unencrypted. So that's embarrassing. So you're right to be concerned about this. I think do it all. Have a router so that you're not on the network at the hotel. And encrypt stuff that's really what if you lose your laptop?
Right.
So you should be paying attention to all of that. And encryption is really the only way to do this. You could buy, and it might be a good solution, a flash drive that's designed to do this. So you would keep the stuff on that flash drive, and it has on it encryption that automatically runs. And so the stuff that's on there is encrypted. Iron Key is a good one of these, ironkey.com. If you kept that data just on the Iron Key, then it would be completely safe. And just make sure you use the router and the VPN and all of that. Don't be North Carolina.
So for where would you store? What type of software would you store passwords and user IDs?
Ah, I'll tell you a good solution for that in just a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm just flabbergasted. This is the governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley, on Friday.
First of all, I want to thank y'all for coming today. This is not a good day for South Carolina.
No, it's not.
What I will tell you is this is one where a lot of people have come together to fix a situation.
You can't fix a situation. You can't.
Which we never would have had, but
yeah,
we have.
Yeah, you have. Because there's 4.6 million people in South Carolina. Inadvertently, the state's Department of Revenue was hacked and inadvertently released 3.6 million Social Security numbers and 387,000 credit and debit card numbers. But they're going to fix that. How? I'm sorry. How would you like to fix that? Issue them all new Social Security numbers? You can't. Inadvertently, they said, and I love this. Well, let me play a little more of this. It's an international hacker.
Has come under attack by an international hacker.
An international hacker. Maybe more than one. Maybe it was a League of International Hackers.
In that South Carolina Department of Revenue and SLED were notified that a server that warehouses all of our taxpayer information.
Unencrypted taxpayer information. She left that word out.
Was breached and taxpayer information was stolen.
Oh, but it wasn't encrypted, was it, Nikki?
In the last 2 weeks, the state and federal law enforcement, along with the Department of Revenue, have come together and
and wrung their hands and said, what are we going to do? Whatever will we do? It's too late. You can't block the barn door after the horse is gone. Well, you could, but there's no point. So, Vaughn, we have a couple of things. First of all, be glad you don't live in South Carolina. And two, thank you for paying attention to this. And I wish, for crying out loud, if you have information like people's Social Security numbers on your hard drive, you have a fiduciary duty, do you not, to protect that stuff. So I'm glad that you're paying attention to this. So I think you're right. Be careful. Use a VPN when you contact work. Have a router. That D-Link's great. It's a very small portable router that provides you with some additional protection, not everything you need, and encrypt the data. Maybe keep it stored on an iron key and use that encryption so that it's not even on your hard drive. And if somebody got the iron key, they still wouldn't be able to get in. Now, you asked a great question, which is, okay, now you've got passwords and you want to keep those private. See, the problem is now you got a nice, long, 12-character, crazy, random password. And what most people do is then write it on a post-it note and put it on their screen. You don't want to do that. You want to store it somewhere safe. So you ask I'm so glad you're asking these questions. So the next question is now, well, I have a good password. How do I store it? There's a great program that I really like called LastPass. Works on everything. LastPass.com. There's a free version that for most people is all they need, but there's also a dollar a month premium version. And frankly, I paid for the premium version because I want to keep these guys in business forever. This is such a great product. So you remember one password, and that one you should make hard, difficult, but you should take the time to memorize it. And it's then got very secure storage for all the rest of the passwords. And we have examined this. My security guy, Steve Gibson, has beat on this with a stick. This is as secure as you can get. And much more secure than writing it down and keeping your wallet or something like that. So LastPass.com.
Is that also available via an app?
It is an app on iOS, Android, Windows Phone. It's on all desktops. It's even available for things like the WebOS, Symbian, BlackBerry, everywhere. In fact, I just got a Windows RT tablet, and it's already on there. So absolutely, these guys they know what they're doing. They have very strong security. It's just fantastic. In fact, I would encourage you to use Google Authenticator with LastPass for something called two-factor or second-factor authentication. In fact, this is great. Your bank probably uses this. Turn it on if they do. Google uses it for their Gmail account. Turn that on. The idea being that you authentic, normally you authenticate with something you know, a password, right? But it'd be nice if there were another factor, a second way, not a second password, but a second way of authenticating. It's, you know, you authenticate with either something you know, something you have, or something you are. Something you know is a password. Something you have is an authenticator, a dongle or your cell phone that generates a special code. In order for a bad guy to break into this LastPass account, they not only need to have the password, something you know, they'd also need to have your cell phone or your dongle or your authenticator. The third thing, something you are, is biometrics. And, of course, the best security, if you're trying to get into a nuclear facility, for instance, you'll need all three, a password, a handprint, or an iris scan, and a dongle, an authenticator. And in order for a thief to break in, they need to have all three, and that's very secure. So LastPass does support two-factor authentication. They use Google Authenticator is one way to do it. It's great. You put it on your cell phone. It generates a new six-digit number every 60 seconds, and that number is required to log in. You do all of that, and you've done everything, you know, possible. There is no perfect security, but I think you have done everything you need to do at that point. Highly recommend all of those solutions. And if you're the state of South Carolina, just, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. I mean, it's just, you know, it's you can't. First of all, International Hacker was probably a 14-year-old kid in Serbia, okay? second of all, it's unconscionable to store that kind of private data unencrypted. Just unconscionable. It's just not. It's everybody knows that's not that's going to get hacked. And then to imply that you can somehow fix the problem, it's too late. It's too late. It does protect the remaining 1 million people in South Carolina, maybe. It's just too late. It's you cannot fix it, and so it's you know, it's nice to say, oh, don't worry, we got it under control. It's never going to happen again. Well, yeah, good, okay, but it happened. Now, and if you are in the Department of Revenue in any of the other 49 states, you might want to be thinking about how you store that data. 8888 ask Leah. Hi. Deb in Lomita, California. Hi, Deb. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hey.
Thank you for taking my call.
Well, I'm so glad you called. Thank you.
Yes, I have a question about Excel. There has been an option on past Excels, on past Windows, that can freeze frame an Excel sheet. It freeze frame a row, like the top
row. You mean lock it? Oh, you mean so that when you scroll, the one of the rows doesn't move.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I cannot find that on Windows.
Well, it's in Excel. It's called locking the row or column.
Okay, locking. Okay,
yeah, so you got it. If you're searching for freeze frame, you're not going to find it. And to be honest, it's been so long since I used Excel, I'm not sure. I suppose I could launch Excel. It is called Freeze. Oh, New York City listener, it is called Freeze. It's under the View command. Thank you, Panky. So look under the View command and freeze a row or column, and then it won't scroll.
Let's play.
Leo LaPointe.
Okay.
Everybody freeze. The tech guy. Thanks to the chat room, I have figured out how to freeze my frames. Thank you, chat room. Thank you, Deb. So here's the deal in Excel. I'm looking at Office 2013, by the way, which just came out. It's very nice, very sweet. But I think it's the same across the board. You go to the View menu, and you'll see in that ruler that pops up, freeze panes, and you can freeze arbitrary rows and columns, or freeze the top row, or freeze the first column. What happens is those columns or rows don't move as you scroll through your spreadsheet. Very handy, because that's where the headers are, right? So you know what data you're looking at. So, Deb, that's it. It's called, you were right. You were actually very close. You called it freeze frame. It's freeze panes, and it is in the View menu or View ribbon. Freeze panes. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Kevin is Kevin's in North Carolina. I apologize for accidentally referring to South Carolina as North Carolina. North Carolina, as far as we know, your tax information is still safe.
Right. No, that's no problem. Hey, it's a pleasure to speak with you, Leo, and thank you for the work that you do.
My pleasure.
You're amazingly awesome.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
I have an issue that I think should maybe appropriate going into the last weekend for Halloween.
Yeah.
I've got a computer that's got two large hard drives on it. One's running Ubuntu 12.10, and the second one is running a version of Gentoo called Savion. That's latest edition version 10.
Great. You're a Linux guy. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm not a Windows hater. Just Linux seems to work a little bit better for me.
Yeah.
I mean, Windows 8 does look really nice and everything, but Linux just seems to work better for me. But except for one small issue. If I go to any other piece of video streaming on the Internet, everything else looks normal. But if I go to YouTube linked video or YouTube itself for videos, I don't know if this is a Flash issue or an HTML5 issue or what, but the person in the video, this is hit or miss, it's not all videos, the person in the video tends to be head to toe Smurf blue.
Wait a minute. Not the whole video, just a person in the video?
Their eyes are the right color. The objects in the background are the right color. The person is blue. And it's only on Savion. It's everything looks perfectly normal on Ubuntu. And my wife has seen this. I've had friends see this. And they don't know if it's a...
That's the strangest thing I ever heard of. Because I could see if the whole video is blue, then there's some Flash issue, right? But just if the video looks normal except for the body of a person...
But now, some videos do look blue all the way through. But, like, I go to Stan Lee Rants. He's blue.
All right.
The plant in the background.
So apparently, this is a common issue with certain kinds of Linux. It's called smurfing. No, I'm just kidding. But I like that. We're going to call it smurfing from now on. This is not unheard of. In fact, boy, the chat room is so good. Strange Seraph has sent me a link to an article from a site called I Heart Ubuntu. This is blue people in YouTube video, and it's on Ubuntu, too. This is apparently, there they are. But this is apparently a Linux problem with Flash. The last big update Adobe did for Flash on Ubuntu, and as you said, it's happening to other Linuxes, result in screwed up looking YouTube videos. Those of us running NVIDIA video cards, so you have to be running an NVIDIA video card, report blue people.
This is affecting my ATI graphics card too.
All right. Well, it's funny because my first reaction was going to be turn off hardware acceleration.
Right.
And I think that this is in fact what they're recommending. Hardware acceleration, in the early days of computing, until like last year, video cards often weren't fast enough to display embedded video. So what they did is they did pass-through video. They actually just passed the video through as a little window. And sometimes this would give you a blue window or a missing window of video. Turning off hardware acceleration fixed that. And apparently it's similar. It's a similar issue. So disable hardware acceleration. That's the advice given this article. And then there's also a package, libvdpau1, that you should uninstall or go back to an earlier version of Adobe Flash. So I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you this article. I can't believe it. They have an apt-get command that they recommend that will uninstall that library. But it's from from iHeartUbuntu from May of 2012. So, and there's an image, there's a picture with blue people. Who would have thunk it? That's a strange... You know, I thought you were punking me, to be honest, Kevin.
Oh, no. I would never do that to you.
This really does happen. But, you know, I've only been doing this show for 30-some years, and I thought I'd heard everything under the sun. But blue people.
I'm just glad you brought this up, because I thought it was just me at first. I'm like, oh, my God.
That's weird. I can't even understand why that would happen. It doesn't even make any sense. But there it is. So there you go. There's the fix, Kevin. And you could also Google blue people on YouTube from iHeartUbuntu. And, yeah, it is a different version of Linux. But obviously the drivers are the same, and it's some sort of weird flash thing. Thank you, Adobe. It's clearly a bug of some kind, but the strangest thing I've ever heard of. Brandon in Oregon, you got a recommendation for a gaming laptop. What do you like?
All right. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks for helping me out here.
I have an Asus G74X. I run Flight Simulator 10 on it. I run RailWorks 3 Train Simulator on it.
Good. Both you're doing the same things he did, so that's great.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm a big simulator fan. For any other games like Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed, it works flawlessly. No issues.
This is they say portable gaming redefined. I love Asus laptops. I would have no hesitation recommending this.
Right, yeah. The only downside to this is it's a heavy laptop. It's 9.5 pounds.
Whoa! but he already said he doesn't care. He's just going to throw it up in on the bunk bed, so that's fine.
It really is a desktop computer.
Right.
It's got an i7 2650, NVIDIA 560M.
Oh, this is nice.
8 gigs of RAM. It's big brother, the G75, has got like 12 and a better processor.
Wow.
But
good recommendation. Hey, I really thank you for that.
Hey, thank you. Tell him also, if he's listening, for Flight Simulator, you want to look for a computer with a high powered processor. If he's running any add on aircraft like PMDG or anything like that, Flight Sim is very processor intensive.
Yes.
It's not going to come down as much to your graphics card and your RAM as it is the processor, and that's the one thing you got to remember.
That's really good advice. Yeah, sometimes people focus with gaming on the graphics processor, but if there are a lot of objects going on, the CPU has to do those calculations. It has to keep up.
Well, when it comes to Flight Simulator, especially add-ons like PMDG, where they're coding in, you know, as much realism as they can, it's to get, you know, flight management systems, you know, all the nonsense that you deal with on a real aircraft to try to work in the computer system, it's all that coding for that specific aircraft that takes up your processor, and that's where you get low frame rates.
All right, Brandon, thank you. Thank you all for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.